Democrats and Republicans is a radical multi-ethnic struggle in the streets and in our workplaces. We don't need allies who blindly follow reformist black leaders. We want working class comrades to struggle against every aspect of this racist capitalist system, especially the issues affecting the black working class amongst the most exploited and oppressed sector in the U.S. We need comrades fighting for revolution and organizing politically to make it so. With that, that's the tail end. I read much of Fighting for Black Lives, Fighting Federal Troops, What Portland NAACP Gets Wrong from Left Voice. Came out just a couple days ago. Okay, that's the end of the show. I get the last word. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Always good. My name's Paul Rowland for Wednesday Talk Radio and KBOO Community Radio. Signing off.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Salem Progressive Film Series presentation of The Long and Twisted Tale of Jordan Cove, LNG. This slideshow depicts part two of Barbara Bernstein's radio documentary series, Holding the Thin Green Line, which explores what is at stake in Southern Oregon if the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal and Pacific Connected Gas Pipeline get built. From July 27th to the 31st, this slideshow video can be viewed at your own convenience at holdingthethingreenline.org/Jordan Cove Slideshow. Then on July 31st from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., we'll hold a live Q&A session with impacted landowners, community organizers, and land and water protectors who are featured in the documentary. Again, that's The Long and Twisted Tale of Jordan Cove LNG documentary slideshow screening, July 27th to the 31st, and a live on Zoom Q&A on July 31st. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
No matter what your needs are regarding domestic violence, we have resources available. We have 11 different agencies in our building. Somebody might come in and say, I want a restraining order, but then that leads to, what am I going to do about the kids? And then that leads to, how am I going to support myself financially? So we have people there that can answer. We have lawyers. They're on a limited basis, but we do have that. And all sorts of people, community action, DHS, a lot of different people that can help out.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome, Tony Locke, to Inside Washington County. Thank you so much for joining us. Ms. Locke is Executive Director of the Family Justice Center. Tony, how did the Family Justice Center get started?
Well, it's an interesting story in that the chief from Hillsboro, Lee Dabrowski, had moved here recently from Salt Lake City and asked if there was a family justice center here. And no, there wasn't. So he got two people, and they told two people, and they told two people, and the story goes on. So got a group of people together. They had the people that are the founders of family justice centers come out and help them with a strategic plan. They've been able to work on that and get everything up and running. So we've been open for about a year and a half now. And so it really came into being because somebody asked the question, do we have one? There's one in Multnomah County, there's one in Clackamas County. but now Washington County has theirs.
And you're right, it is a good story. How about you? How did you come to be involved in the issue of domestic violence?
Well, interestingly enough, that was my first job out of college, was working, getting a domestic abuse program up and running in rural Wisconsin. Hmm. You might think Wisconsin's all rural, but it's not.
No, Madison's a great town. I have relatives there.
Oh, good, good, good. So I've worked for over 20 years in domestic violence in various capacities, head of a crisis center, head of a shelter, now the head of a Family Justice Center.
Did you just sort of slide into it? For example, my first professional job was counseling alcoholism, substance abuse, etc., and people immediately assumed that I was in recovery or I had a family situation. No, it was the first job that was available when I graduated, and I learned about the issues after getting the job. I'm just wondering if there was something personally motivational for you.
I think it's a similar story to yours in that I just kind of slid into it. Interestingly, I have some experience in domestic violence when I was 18, 19 years old. So I certainly understand how things can happen where you stay and stayed. And I was, you know, working full time, living with my parents, had a car, but I stayed. So I can understand where people come from on that.
I understand that the center, according to its website, its mission, is committed to ending domestic violence in Washington County. While I'm anxious to learn how you hope to do that, how you plan to do that, I was hoping you could share with us just how serious is the domestic violence problem in Washington County.
Well, I think it's fairly serious. We certainly get enough people at the center. In our first year, we provided over 6,200 services. So one of the main things people come to us for are restraining orders. And the beauty of that is that the restraining order, they can fill out the paperwork there, but at 1 o'clock they can appear in front of the judge in our remote court. So it makes it a little bit different. You know, they don't have to worry about going to the courthouse, those kinds of things. So it's a very supportive environment, and we provide child care there. It's interesting, about 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience domestic abuse in their lifetime. And in Oregon, actually, it's 1 in 3 women rather than 1 in 4 women.
Mm.
I don't know why that would be, other than I think there's a good job of reporting and services available, that there's stuff to go out to that in some other communities may not have that.
So it yields better documentation for us.
Yes.
Got it. And it leads right into the next question. I was interested not only how we compare to other states, but how do we compare to other counties in our state?
That's a great question. I don't know that I have a good answer for you there. Every justice center is run a little bit differently. We're run as a private nonprofit. Some of them are run as a county program, like Multnomah is county. And then the Sheriff's Department is actually the lead on the Clackamas County Domestic or Family Justice Center. So they're all a little different. So we all kind of like, one of the things is we don't gather a lot of information at the Justice Center. The goal really, to bring people in was to have them tell their story once. So we just kind of find out exactly what they're looking for and then pass that on to an advocate from another agency.
Great. I think we'll get there too in just a second.
Sure.
You sort of answered this question before I had a chance to ask it, but I want to get a fuller sense. Just who are the victims of domestic violence? The media orients us to expect them to be female. You mentioned that 1 out of 7 is male. I'm intrigued by that, but I'm also wondering, when we talk domestic violence, does child abuse fit under that same rubric?
I think what we've been looking for in terms of domestic violence is the adult, intimate partner violence.
Mm-hmm.
Basically it's intimate partner violence that we're looking at. So I would say at the Justice Center, we probably are 85 to 90% female victims, and then we do get male victims. Interesting, we get elder abuse victims, and they're looking for a restraining order against a family member or something like that. So I would say more of the men that I see are older than the average age of, 30-something.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And I didn't realize you even dealt with elder abuse.
The only thing we do with elder abuse is they provide the restraining order opportunity. Otherwise, there are other programs that deal with the abuse. We are a mandated reporter, so if somebody would do that, talk about injuring an elderly person or a child, we are expected to report that.
Understood. Just another question for a moment about the intimate partners. The men who are victims of domestic violence, are the perpetrators usually other men or are they women?
They can be both. So I would say it's probably an even split at this point, just because we don't see a lot of men. I mean, it's very hard for somebody to come forward, no matter who you are, but I think as a man, it's more difficult.
Our culture does not really support men being beaten, especially by women, let alone other men.
So right. There's so much other abuse that goes on besides the beatings.
That's definitely true. And do you deal with the emotional abuse if there aren't beatings?
Yes. We can deal with emotional abuse. There just isn't a remedy for it. So with physical abuse, there could be an arrest, there could be a restraining order. But with emotional abuse, there isn't a choice there.
Unless part of the emotional abuse has a threat to it. If there's a threat, can they not seek?
It has to be a really pretty clear threat. Because, people are coming in and they feel threatened. Mm-hmm. And I don't doubt for a minute that they are. But by standards of law, it's a little different.
It's difficult. You have to protect people on both sides of the issue.
Yes.
I think that's a real challenge for folks that are in the system.
Yes.
Is there an ethnic difference? Are people from different ethnic or cultural backgrounds more or less likely to be involved in domestic violence?
I don't think so. It's hard to say, actually, because I think what we have is we have a good representation of Washington County coming in. So we have, your Caucasian. Then we have the Latinx community. There's some from South Asia, those kinds of things. The one thing that I think maybe even keeps Latinx people out is the fear of immigration or something like that. Even though we have nothing like that and we don't report it or anything like that, it's just important to know that that's safe with us. We don't, deal with that. And I think in our community, we have that same philosophy.
We have the same philosophy. We have protection. We have sanctuary states. We have sanctuary colleges. We have, I think there's a pretty strong feeling of support for the Latino population. But it's actually in my next question. There's such a legacy of fear from not just the Latino population that may have come from another country, but from all refugees and immigrants. And they have a lack of trust for authority. I'm hoping that something like the Family Justice Center might be less threatening than dialing the police.
I would think it is, because they're going to meet with an advocate. It doesn't matter who comes through our door, they meet with an advocate. We do have law enforcement on site, but they're kind of called in as needed. It's not something that automatically happens. The majority of law enforcement are detectives in plain clothes, so that helps. We do have a female officer in uniform, but I think that works out okay. But we take such little information from people that it would be hard to get any information about what their status is.
Starting up is something, especially something brand new. It takes an awful lot of effort. Like you said, it started with people talking to people. And what makes the Family Justice Center model different from other programs? What's special about it?
Well, I think what the Family Justice Center is trying to do is make it a one-stop shop for victims of domestic violence. So no matter what your needs are regarding domestic violence, we have resources available. We have 11 different agencies in our building. So somebody might come in and say, I want a restraining order, but then that leads to, what am I going to do about the kids? And then that leads to, how am I going to support myself financially? So we have people there that can answer. We have lawyers. They're a limited basis, but we do have that. And all sorts of people, community action, DHS, a lot of different people that can help out.
That sounds absolutely marvelous, the Fred Meyer model of social service.
I
sincerely do appreciate that. I'm wondering how that works, though. It sounds like you can do things so efficiently, like having the court right in-house. So if I were to come in and have more than two or three needs, the restraining order, some financial support, because I've just left my partner who's been abusive, could I get all those services done in one day?
You could. You really could. It's not uncommon for somebody to get three services in the morning and then do court at 1 o'clock. So it can be done in one day. The restraining order, what happens is they have to be in by 10:30 in the morning to get a restraining order that same day.
Mm-hmm.
So then they fill out the paperwork, it gets e-filed, they appear in front of the judge at 1 o'clock, and then it's served by the sheriff's department the next day. So that is kind of sometimes a challenging place to be if they came in for the restraining order in hopes that by 5 o'clock they would have them served. It's a possibility, but nobody's going to guarantee that.
I don't mean to put this on you, but there's a lot of concern, at least over the last several years that I've read in articles and talked to people about restraining orders, the power of them. So many folks have sought restraining orders,
yes,
and been hurt or killed despite having a restraining order. Do you have any thoughts about that? I'm not asking you to solve the problem, but I think it's a real serious concern.
What happens is the victim is most likely to be killed when she leaves her partner. So that leads to more of those things. So she may leave the partner, get a restraining order, but then that can amp up the person a lot. And I think that's what happens. And if there is no real respect for law and it's all about power and control and getting that person back under their control, if I can't have you, nobody will.
Right.
So, but I think if you have people that respect the law and will, you know, abide by the restraining order, it's fine. But for some people, it's probably just worth the paper it's printed on if they have no regard for the law.
Well, it's not just regard for the law. You're also assuming logic. And I think,
yes,
a lot of people that do harm to other people don't necessarily think it through.
That's
it's an emotional
true.
Response. It's
very
like,
much.
I hate you. Or like you said so articulately, if I can't have you, nobody else will. I'd like to think that's not too logical a thought. That's more based out of emotion.
It's not really logical.
Fair enough. How did the center get its initial funding, and how does it have its ongoing funding?
Funding is pretty secure. What we had is initially, just to get things up and running, we'd gotten a couple of grants locally to be able to have a project manager,
mm-hmm,
to start the process and get the construction under going, you know, get that going. And then two of my board members have gone to all the cities and the county and secured funding from every city and every county. So, or just the county, I'm sure. And then we do a major fundraiser November 2nd. We're doing our Denim and Diamonds fundraiser.
I'm sorry, say that again. November 2nd, the what fundraiser?
Denim and Diamonds.
Denim and, it's so catchy, I missed it.
Yes, well, it's putting on the Ritz that for this year.
Uh-huh.
And we raise over $100,000 for that. We write other grants, we do other fundraising, but I would say the majority of our funding comes from the county, the city. We're really looking to get either state or federal funding because that would certainly alleviate a lot of issues for
us. Well, would add to some security, some
it
sense
would,
of security.
Because that's, you have to go every year to ask for this money. So
I know, your hand gets tired when you have to
and
hold
they,
it out
all
the time.
They go running when they see me.
No, no, I'm sure they don't. Not with a track record of success, they don't.
No.
Is there a program for volunteers?
Right now, the only thing we're looking for in volunteers is someone that will help out either with a fundraiser or do some outreach for us. Due to certain laws and regulations, we're not allowed to have volunteers work with clients, so it's a different situation. We initially did have volunteers, navigators,
mm-hmm,
and it worked out really well, and then we found out through a couple of our partners that we couldn't get any personally identifying information from clients. So we basically don't gather much information other than what city do you live in and what services are you seeking.
Well, that also, that restriction is somewhat problematic in your maintaining of statistics, but it might also be a kind of a safety net for folks who are thinking of coming in if they know they don't have to divulge all that much.
I think that's the beauty of it, is that they don't have to divulge that much, so it is a safer feeling personally,
mm-hmm,
knowing that I don't have to pull everything out and, you know, prove myself.
You know, you've had a little bit of experience as a young person in domestic violence, but you've had an awful lot of experience working with this population. It's tough. You must see a lot of people who are victims of domestic violence return to the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Is that an
sure.
accurate?
Sure.
How does that affect you? How do you manage to maintain your motivation and incentive to work in such a tough situation?
Well, I think, first of all, recognizing that people will go back. It takes 4 to 7 times up to 7 times before a person will make the final break. So it's a common thing. So you kind of think that this is part of the gig, that they will go back. There's something, you know, they want to keep the family intact. They love the abuser, but want the abuse to stop. Mm-hmm. And it's so ingrained, the power and control, that it's very difficult to interrupt that and have somebody say, let's even the playing field here.
Sure.
So it's really rewarding when people come, they really want help, and you feel good about giving that help. And then if they come back again, you feel the same way.
It's sort of like another opportunity to help.
Sure.
And you can't afford to give up on a person, especially if your experience tells you that this is kind of like what to expect.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes really good sense. And it's, I think it's important to be able to find a way to get some reward out of such tough work.
Mm-hmm.
The big question, again, respecting your goal, how do you folks plan to put an end to domestic violence in Washington?
I think with all of our partners, we're hoping to be able to do that, because if everybody's focused on it, we have a wonderful, I've never seen law enforcement more supportive than they are in Washington County. So that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They give out our cards. We have little cards that we have printed up, because it's something that a victim can conceal from the abuser. And we have one of our partners is called Voices Set Free, and they work specifically on education and prevention as it relates to domestic violence in your childhood. So a lot of people are still traumatized from watching the abuse growing up. And we know if we don't get to the young people, if we don't get to the kindergarten kids, we're not going to be able to make a difference.
How do you reach out to the young people? How do you try to get to them?
I think it's a matter of presentations and interactive activity, something that will land with them a little bit better.
Are you going to classrooms?
Some of them. Right now I've been in college classrooms. I haven't been in any school classrooms, but one of our goals has been to get connected with all the schools as well.
Is there any consideration of training for teachers, providing training for educators?
We really were looking at providing the education to the counselors at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we can get one foot in the door, we could probably get another foot in the door.
True. And the counselors, if they're on site in school, they can help the teachers too. I'm just a little concerned because so many schools no longer have counselors.
Mm-hmm.
That's because of financial situations.
Sure.
But as long as you can find somebody in there, that sounds great. What can the Family Justice Center do if they receive a report of domestic violence, say from a witness, but the person who's been on the receiving end of that violence, even if they're contacted, they don't want to do anything, but the witness swears that they've seen the violence happen. Are there any options for the center?
Well, what we can do is provide some information to the caller about domestic violence, specifically if they leave, if the victim leaves, they're, maybe going to go back. So you have to be prepared for that. The most important thing is safety for the victim. But there's nothing we can do. We wouldn't call out to them because that would not be safe. Because if the perpetrator is there or checks the phone, which they do, we wouldn't want to have that out there for them to do. But we would explain what services are available, to believe the victim when they say what's going on, but then also to be patient.
Would it be advisable to suggest a call to the local police, depending where that's coming from, so they could do a welfare check, or would
Sure.
that also be dangerous?
No, I think that's fine. If they, if somebody sees it and they want to report it, that's huge. That doesn't happen very often, but and that's one of the things we count on in the world is people helping us out from, different places,
mm-hmm.
and yet family violence is considered such a family matter.
It's a secret.
It is,
mm-hmm.
all right, and so that makes it really difficult.
Understood. As a matter of fact, on that point about a secret, it seems to me that there are some cultures in our metro area, Cambodian cultures, other Asian cultures, that will deny domestic abuse and will not admit to it, even if you show them those proverbial pictures. I'm wondering if you've had any, the Justice Center has had any experience with folks from those kind of backgrounds.
We have, and I think some of it is the people that we do have contact with have accepted it for a long time, and then all of a sudden say, I don't care what the culture says, I don't care what the mm-hmm. values of this culture are. I am going to make myself safe as well as my children. So I I think that it's challenging, because I think also different cultures are going to be fearful in terms of, again, immigration or anything like that. So not necessarily trusting. So we try to be, have a diverse staff so people feel very mm-hmm. confident and comfortable coming in. So hopefully that's the case.
I think we all sadly realize that domestic violence doesn't operate from 9 to 5. It can happen any time. What are the hours of the center? How available are you guys?
We are available Monday through Thursday from 8:30 till 4, mm-hmm. and then again on Friday from 8:30 to 3. The reason we have such short hours is it's based on the partners that are there, what their hours are. And so when they get done at 4 o'clock or whatever, there's no one there to help the people. So
what happens after 4 or 3 or on the weekends if a victim calls in seeking for help? They can't come into the doors, I understand.
Right, right, right.
But when the phone rings, what happens?
Our phone is just answered by a voicemail. But we do give out the 24-hour helpline for people to reach.
And then also probably say that you can call back tomorrow and our regular hours are such and such.
Yes.
Okay, great. I was just recently told that the City of Hillsborough Police Department has a person on site who works as an advocate. Could you tell me a little about that relationship?
Yes, it's wonderful. We have one in Hillsborough, we have one in Beaverton, both police departments. And they are kind of volunteer coordinators, because what they do is they bring in people that will go out and visit victims, primarily either on a police call or at the hospital. So we have trained advocates who have gone through 40 hours or more of training to go out and meet with the victim wherever they are. Unless there's an issue in terms of safety, if there's a safety issue, they wouldn't go to the home. So usually with the law enforcement officer. So it's a real compliment. Again, that's where we get a lot of our referrals. I would say law enforcement is our number one referral source.
Which makes good sense.
Yes.
Tony, I wonder, domestic violence is just horrible to consider, and some of what happens, victims are just awful. But there's an assumption that comes with that most of these relationships are then terminal, that they just can't work out. I'm wondering, in your experience, do you ever see any of the relationships that come to you with domestic violence, do you ever see them heal, get well, and the couple stay together and improve?
Well, we don't work that long with people, so I don't have an ability to go back and find out. I will say that there are better treatment programs in Washington County that they can go to. Sometimes what the whole issue is it's violence is just a part of the power and control that they use. So there's the intimidation, there's isolation, using the children,
money.
Yeah. Sex, all that stuff. And so while you might be able to get the violence out of the relationship, if the person's on probation or whatever, you might be able to get the violence, but you're probably not going to get rid of the behavior of power and control.
Not without some form of counseling, assistance, by all means. Tony, our time is running out, and I'm wondering, as we've tried to cover a lot, if there's anything that I failed to ask that you'd like to share with us.
I just think bringing all these people together under one roof has been amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better group of people to come together, and some of them are being pulled out, singularly from their agency to come and work with us. And I think that's been outstanding. We just had Beaverton Police Department join us.
Mm-hmm.
Washington County Sheriff is going to be there starting September 3rd full-time. Hillsborough has 2 detectives full-time at the Justice Center. And then we have a couple of attorneys. One works with family law, which is a big issue for people. And then the other is sexual assault. We have the Sexual Assault Resource Center there, as well as an attorney that works specifically in the area of sexual assault. So it's Domestic Violence Resource Center is our largest partner, and they provide quite a bit of services to the community.
Sounds absolutely excellent. Tony, thank you for your efforts, thank you for your work, and I wish you and your team all the success in the world in ending domestic violence in Washington County. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street Theater's virtual screening of The Last Tree. The Last Tree follows a British boy of Nigerian descent who becomes reunited with his biological mother. The film explores his struggle with the unfamiliar culture and values while learning what it means to be a young black man in London. Again, that's the Clinton Street Theater's virtual screening of The Last Tree. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the virtual Obon Fest at Oregon Buddhist Temple on Saturday, August 1st from 7 to 8 p.m. streaming online. Obon Fest is a celebration of the Japanese holiday that honors one's ancestors through community rituals, song, and dance. This annual Portland event will be held online this year with dances to follow along with and memorializing of those who have passed. People of all backgrounds are invited to participate and dance along. Again, that's the virtual Obon Fest at Oregon Buddhist Temple on Saturday, August 1st from 7 to 8 p.m. streaming online. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland.
Today on Wings, La Casa Internazionale delle Donne in Rome.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs